forward to taking your class.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's coming up here in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to seeing you there.
Great.
Yeah. And looks like we're just about ready to get started. So I've just turned on the recorder. Oh, actually, I need to turn on the recorder here.
Recording in progress.
Okay, let's go. So I think everything is working. Yeah, so just a warm welcome to everybody this evening. So this is Heart of Freedom Meditation. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to come together to practice again. And so as we get comfy and settled, to just make an intention of setting aside preoccupations, cares, concerns from the day, and just letting your mind come to rest here in the present moment as best you can. And we can receive the invitation that present moment experience in the form of body sensations offers in this endeavor to become more fully present. Sometimes it's easy to just come to rest in the experience of life in this moment. Other times it can be more challenging. Take a little bit more deliberateness and repeated intention. But to do so within the spirit of kindness and compassion, really. So, in the process of bringing our focus to presence, it's helpful to eyes close often, and just connecting with maybe a particular place in the body where the sensations are easy to notice. Maybe it's points of contact, or it could be the aliveness of fingers, or maybe arms resting on legs, or so just an access point into the present through physical sensation, and then perhaps expanding the focus out to sweep through the sitting form and see if there's any places where there's perhaps some residual stress, tension, tightness, anything that's left over from the day that we can notice, and then maybe easily, just through awareness itself, just let it go or let it be. This invitation to get settled and bring some ease into our present moment experience. It's particularly useful to pay attention to places where there might be chronic stress or tension or constriction. Yeah, so just noticing what those places might be and see if it's possible to just let things soften. And if it seems helpful to deepen the breath, to take maybe two or three long, slow, deep breaths, please be invited to do so, just letting the breath be a messenger of kindness to every cell in your body, really inviting some softening, some relaxation, perhaps some release. And then to stay present with the experience of the breath and just letting this breath do what it does best, which is breathe itself. It just knows how to breathe in and breathe out, and to stay present with that as much as possible. And so we can take the breath as a home base, as a primary reference point here in the present moment. So this evening, as we start our sit together, I'd like to do an expanded version of taking refuge. And usually at the beginning I mention taking refuge, but it's the focus for our exploration this evening. So I'd like to share with you a guided meditation. It's brief, and then there'll be some space for just to kind of experience what it's like to deepen into the kind of refuge that brings peace. And so please consider yourself invited to take refuge in awareness, to take refuge in truth, and to take refuge in love. And these are places that can provide true refuge. And in the traditional Buddhist understanding, it's taking refuge in the Buddha, in our Buddha nature, in the Dharma, the direct experience of the truth. And taking refuge in Sangha, our interconnectedness with each other, our community that we experience support from and give support to, and ultimately our inexorably intertwined nature with life itself. And so as we open these three pathways or gateways, they reveal the taste of freedom that is inherent to all paths of awakening. And so the invitation this evening is just to reflect a little bit here at the beginning, and perhaps if you'd like to repeat some phrases that are refuge phrases, And the first phrase is, I take refuge in awareness. The second is, I take refuge in truth. And the third is, I take refuge in love. And after each, to reflect on what is the deep meaning about this for you. And instead of those words, awareness, truth, and love, you can auto-translate it into Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, if that works better for you. In fact, you can adapt this reflection in whatever way most resonates with you. So, to keep it fresh and keep it alive and creative, so it isn't something that's stagnant or rote, to experiment with it for yourself. So if you'd like to participate, you can start. And if you prefer to just stay present with breathing and do a standard mindfulness practice, of course, that's an option. If you choose to participate, just to begin with the recitation here for a few breaths, I take refuge in awareness. And just repeating that, I take refuge in awareness. And this phrase can be the central focus. Of course, there's always the breath to come back to. And if the mind goes off in discursive thinking or commentary or judgment, there's this phrase to come back to. I take refuge in awareness. And as you offer these words to yourself, you might feel a resonance with a human being or spiritual figure who expresses these qualities of enlightened awareness, of luminosity, of openness, of deep understanding. And can you imagine that same presence within your own being? Or perhaps it's more natural to directly sense this awakened presence that lives within you. I take refuge in this. You could simply ask yourself, is awareness or consciousness here in this moment? And what is it like to notice the presence of awareness? How does your mind experience the space of awareness? How does your body, your heart experience it? Just to notice what happens if you just allow yourself to really surrender to this refuge of awareness. As you rest your heart in your true nature. rest in your heart, in your Buddha nature. And now I'm going to invite us to transition to the next refuge. And if you find it works better just to stay with one, you're of course welcome to modify these instructions in whatever way works best for you. But if you'd like to move on to the next refuge, it would be, I'm taking refuge in the truth. And just repeating these words. And as you offer these words, you might take a moment to recall what is precious to you about the spiritual path, about meditation practice and teaching, about living a compassionate life. This is the outer expression of a path of truth. With this in your awareness, open without resistance to the changing flow of your moment-to-moment experience. Coming into the center of the present and being aware of sounds, feelings, sensations that are arising and passing away. And to notice what is the experience of opening to the experience of life. What is it that's happening? What happens when you let go into this refuge of truth? What do you know is true in this moment? Taking refuge in this capacity. So transitioning once again, if you wish to, turning to the phrase, I take refuge in love, in spiritual love, or metta. And so that could be the phrase that you repeat here for a few minutes. And as you offer these words, just notice what they mean to you. Do you feel a sense of treasuring and valuing your family, friends, spiritual friends? Does it bring up a yearning for more belonging, more connection? And just allowing yourself a particular friend or loved one to be a reflection. And as you sense that person's goodness and dearness, just notice the response of your heart. Is there warmth, tenderness, openness? Yeah, just notice what that feels like in your body. And then let go of any idea of other and open directly to the love itself. And notice what happens as you relax and actually be that loving presence. Yeah, what happens as you fully inhabit this refuge of love? What happens as you rest your heart in what is true? Just taking refuge. Different aspects of embodied presence. So So at this point, you're welcome to continue with the practice of repeating refuge phrases, whichever you prefer to repeat. Or you're welcome to come back to just centering in the experience of the breath itself and noticing, yeah, if there's any effect. What's it like now? Present with this moment. And as always, there's a wonderful present moment object to come back to if the mind gets lost or wanders off into identification with stories, commentary, judgment. There's a breath or there's a refuge to come back to. So it's practicing to remember in this moment we are the awareness. We are the truth. We are the love. And to not believe anything to the contrary. Anything that passes through body sensations, thinking, thoughts, feelings, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. All of that happens in a field where we can be the awareness, we can be the field of awareness, the field of truth, the field of love, and that's what we take refuge in. So let's stay with the thread of most predominant sensation and the formal meditation has ended, but meditation continues, mindfulness continues. And yeah, so attuned to whatever degree is possible to body sensation. Notice if the body is has needs that it's expressing for relief or movement. And it can be really subtle. It doesn't have to be anything that's pronounced or dramatic, but to attend to that and just allow it to be part of your practice. You can even find the body sensations as reminders of taking refuge. The truth in this moment is that my left shoulder is aching. There's ache there, there's energy, and there's a negative feeling, tone, quality. Yeah, and there is a desire to do a little stretch or move. So, yeah. We can do that with mindfulness, curiosity. Yeah, what happens? And that could be, of course, any place. And it may not be true. There may not be anything particularly that's calling out in this moment. And so we can also appreciate that. Thich Nhat Hanh famously said, don't forget about the non-toothache aspect of things. So when the body isn't hurting, it's really wonderful to notice that. The absence of pain and discomfort. These bodies are so incredibly sensitive. And there's millions, or I don't know if it's millions, but thousands upon thousands of nerve endings sending signals to our brains. Yeah, so we can be present and, with that. And then I'd like to just kind of gradually transition us to some announcements. And this can also be experienced mindfully. You can notice hearing or seeing. So I've posted some info in the chat. So you're welcome to take a look at that. And I'd like to just briefly share a few upcoming events from PIMC. So, this coming Sunday, on the Sunday morning meditation, there's a Sunday youth program. So that's at 10 a.m. So children are welcome. Next week on Tuesday the 12th, there's a new class, Finding Ourselves in the Story of Race, Belonging, Race, and Inclusion. That's at 6:30, and there's a series of six classes. So encourage you to check that out. Go to portlandinsight.org. Also coming up, the Women's Restoration and Rejuvenation Circle with Candle Summers. It also begins next week on Friday, September 15th at 6:30. And it meets the third Friday of the month. And then coming up on Saturday, September 23rd, there's a retreat day with Robert Beattie and Betsy Toll, Living, Loving, and Letting Go, Grief and Impermanence in a Changing World. That's from 9 to 4:30. And then coming up on the 28th of September, Thursday at 6, there's the Basics of Mindfulness, six-class series with me, Doug Pullen. And then finally, Saturday, September 30th, 10 to 4, is an autumn equinox meditation and movement retreat from 10 to 4. So lots of wonderful things coming up here to partake and participate in. If you're interested, go to portlandindieside.org. And also thanks once again to all of you who find ways and resources to make this evening possible. Without you, we wouldn't be here without your generosity. So thanks. Really appreciate it. I'm very grateful. And if you'd like to participate in that practice in some form, there's a link on in the chat section. So I'd like to open things up and give folks a chance to check in, if any of you would like to share a few words about what's alive for you this evening. It's totally optional. But if you'd like to, you start with just saying your name. And then when you've spoken your words, then to just say, I finished, or I've spoken. Let's the next person know that it's their turn. So I'll get us started this evening. My name is Doug. And I am just appreciating the incredible refuge of Sangha this evening, of community. I wouldn't be here without it. So I'm forever grateful. Thank you. I have spoken.
My name is Larry, and I wanted to say how very significant the words were today for me, and in my imagination for many, many people, but the idea of refuge and breaking it down to awareness and love, and what was the third?
Truth.
Those three. I thought of them, you know, that's ATL, and I was playing around. How can I remember them? Because it seems so central. A seed. And so somehow I came up with the name Atlin. And I went into the Professor Google and found out that Atlin is both a Turkish and a Mongolian name meaning golden. And this for me is very golden material. So I didn't want this time to pass without saying, what a deep and profound and living experience the material and the consciousness you presented today. So thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing.
I am Michelle, and I'm very, very, very grateful to be here. I'm hearing an echo on the back.
I did too.
Yeah, anyways, I'm finished.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Michelle. And I think I fixed the echo problem, so we'll see.
Okay, good.
My name is Rita, and I have found the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha to be the backbone of my sense of personhood and purpose and intention. I just got back from a almost week-long reunion from Emma Goldman Clinic for Women in Iowa City. It's a feminist women's health clinic where I worked 50 years ago. And I hadn't seen a lot of these women in 50 years, and I was struck. These are powerful, intelligent, creative women fighting for women's reproductive rights and very, very angry. And I was just blown away by the anger. It was there when I worked there. And now, as I've talked to people about this, people really feel around me, everyone that I've talked to feels that it's justified. And I understand that, but I don't think that's how we change anything, is with the intention of powerful anger in them and us. So it was a whirlwind of, I felt like I was on a retreat of awakening to really look at how do we deal with anger, not just within ourselves, but in the world. So at some point I'd like to hopefully revisit that. How do we invoke change without coming from a place of fear and anger, but from a place of loving kindness? And apparently that's very difficult in our world to do. I'm finished.
Thank you, Rita. Yeah, and at some point I will circle back to that on Thursday. So, yeah. So, just checking, anybody just on the cusp of sharing? Well, so I'd like to share a short Dharma talk on taking refuge to kind of, provide more for us to recollect, to remember from our own experience what's true. And this kind of segues really from your sharing, Rita. When we look at our individual lives and the larger world, the neighborhoods, the community, the nation, the world that we live in, we can see both that there's a lot of beauty and kindness and compassion, although often it doesn't make the news. And there's also a tremendous amount of greed, hatred, delusion, suffering. And if we deeply consider our own painful life experiences, or contemplating the world around us, it can really be hard to stay balanced, to stay hopeful, and to feel a sense of confidence that things can heal or change in a positive direction. We can easily become frightened and lost and despairing and lonely. So it's so important to balance turning towards the challenges that we face with a practice that can sustain us. And to me, that is the brilliance or the genius of the Buddha Dharma, of the Buddhist teaching, is that it's about resourcing us with refuge so we can turn towards suffering. We, without a sense of refuge in this capacity to be aware, to be awake, to directly discover what's true, and to know that we are love, that we are in a field of loving interconnectedness, it would be overwhelming. For me, personally, I can't imagine facing the world without refuge. It would be untenable. And it's natural for us as human beings to look for relief from suffering. It's hardwired into our nervous system. We're hardwired to move away from unpleasant experiences and to move towards pleasant and to more or less ignore neutral. That hardwiring is based on survival instinctual conditioning. In the world today, it doesn't always serve us, serve our best interests. But at the root of it is a desire to survive and thrive and being happy. That deepest of desires find that place of refuge is what the Buddha described as, look, yeah, we know that there's those needs for safety and for community, for connection, all of the universal human needs. But our reactive, habitual conditioning programming doesn't necessarily lead us always in the direction of meeting those needs. So that's where spiritual practice comes in. Some refuges are not so skillful because they maybe provide a temporary escape from the pain, but they don't increase our insight about our predicament. So we end up kind of getting in repeat patterns or cycles. Now, for example, denial of suffering or avoidance of pain through substance abuse or workaholism or like obsessive shopping or compulsive eating or incessant busyness are unlikely in the long run to promote wisdom and self-compassion that are necessary for healing. But they tend to be in the unobserved mind, that mind-body, tend to be the go-to refuges in our culture. And of course, there's other things we could add to the list. That isn't a complete list. The refuge that I'm talking about here this evening offers support for our journey as we move through joy and sorrow and gain and loss. What it does is reaffirms, or maybe affirms for the first time, our sacred connection with the world and with each other, that we belong to each other. That we find refuge in something bigger than the separate self, which is illusory, ultimately. You know, some people here may have been in, or currently are in, 12-step groups. And one of the characteristics of 12-step groups is there's refuge in a higher power, something beyond the skin-encapsulated ego. Arguably is, along with the community that goes along with the 12-step group, one of the most powerful aspects of it, that we transcend our preoccupation with the separate self. It doesn't require a belief in a deity or some kind of supernatural force. We don't have to worship the Buddha or worship anyone to take refuge. Because if we really understand, for example, what's taking refuge in the Buddha, when the Buddha was asked by someone who encountered him on the road who he was, he asked a series of questions. He asked, are you a king? And the Buddha said no. Are you a man? And the Buddha said no. And he kept on asking these questions. And then the man kind of got frustrated and said, well, what are you then? And he said, I'm awake. I'm present. Which is a profound statement. There wasn't any identity. Didn't say I'm a doctor. Didn't say I'm an anything. His presence was his calling card. And that's what we take refuge in. Well, that's one of the things. By directing our attention towards our deepest nature, by honoring the essence of our being, our own Buddha nature becomes alive in us. And it isn't creating something that doesn't already exist. It's a process of uncovering. We take refuge in that which we are, most essentially. At our deepest, in our deepest nature, our deepest caverns of the heart, is awake. Yeah, we are the Buddha, or we have the potential to recognize that. This is a open-handed refuge. There's nothing exclusive about it. It's universal. The process of awakening, one of the things that's pretty amazing is that as we start to wake up, we start to see everybody as the Buddha. It isn't an exclusive club. Some of us just have a little dust in our eyes, a little delusion. Traditionally it's said that the places that we often look for refuge in our culture and in human life are a fool's errand. There's no refuge to be found in power, money, fame, social positions, nor is it in relationships, family, children, sex, food, drugs, alcohol. Despite the claims of advertising in our consumerist materialist culture, refuge isn't in going shopping online on Amazon. or better, faster, newer, whatever. Actually, a lot of people find themselves coming to a practice like this because they've already tried all of those things and it didn't work. So we end up here. Some of us learn quicker than others. And I'm not saying this particular practice is the only practice, of course, but to a spiritual practice, to a spiritual inquiry, to a spiritual journey. Even spiritual trappings don't provide refuge. Spiritual bypass doesn't provide refuge. By spiritual bypass, I mean going into trance states that are disconnected. A trance state would be a kind of a state where we zone out into a state of kind of bliss. One of my teachers, Ruth Dennison, she had an uncanny ability to, on a meditation retreat, to be able to pick up on someone who was zoning out. Maybe it was because they were snoring back in the corner, but no, I think it was more maybe just noticing that they were really unresponsive. And she said it kindly, but she said, "I won't have any trance junkies on my retreats." Because that is a neutral refuge. I'd like to share with you a poem. This is by Kabir. "Are you looking for me? I'm in the next seat. My shoulder is against yours. You will not find me in stupas, not in shrine rooms, nor in synagogues, nor in cathedrals, not in masses, nor croutons, not in legs winding around your own neck, nor in eating nothing but vegetables. When you really look for me, you will see me instantly. You will find me in the tiniest house of time." Because Kabir says, "Student, tell me, what is God?" "She is the breath inside the breath." "Student, tell me, what is awakening?" "It is the ineffable present experience of living in awareness, in truth, in love." So this indescribable phenomenon that we can maybe only talk about with a certain quality of feeling in the form of poems, it lies at the heart of all mystical endeavors. And every religious tradition has some term or set of symbols for this reality, which no words can adequately express. And it can't be contained by any particular story or set of ideas or beliefs or practices. We only know it by our own direct experience, by our deep intuitive understanding, the awakening of the heart mind. That's what we take refuge in. The experience of refuge is so deep that it has no bottom. It has no sides. It has no top. It's a limitless, boundless space. that can contain all things. And ultimately, there isn't anything. There's just what there is. So, and back down into the deepest suffering, Viktor Frankl, the concentration camp survivor and astute observer of human behavior, he was a psychoanalyst, and the founder of logotherapy, discovered that those who survived Auschwitz did so only if they had faith in a greater purpose for themselves and the world. They took refuge in something. And so there's incredible lessons to learn from the darkest and deepest depths of human suffering. How does the human heart stay open under those conditions? It does appear from his reports that it's possible. There's that famous book, Man's Search for Meaning, which if you haven't read it, I encourage you to. And so, like the survivors of Auschwitz, we need to find our true refuge and purpose and orient and support ourselves amidst the fragmented poles of a busy modern life. And for me, at the center of that is taking refuge. So just to speak personally, and then I'd like to open this up for sharing. You know, how do I take refuge? It's simple for me. In each moment, what's the most predominant object? Noticing the body sitting, present with mindful body sensation, or awareness of breathing, or noticing feeling as feeling, or noticing thinking as thinking. Or the recognition, and this was happening for me earlier today, there was a long period of noticing dukkha as dukkha and just being present with that. Noticing impermanence, present with that. The awareness of all of these things is the refuge. That is the refuge. And there's also a recognition of the truth, being present with the true nature of things. And happening in a field of love, of kindness, not under the influence of ill will or hatred. When the mind is free from judging, noticing that the mind is free from judging, and taking refuge in that, or noticing that the mind is colored by judgment. When we notice it, then we're free from it. That's refuge. So I'd like to invite you to reflect, and perhaps this has already happened or happening, to just reflect on where you go when you feel unmet needs, when there's distress or agitation or sadness or dispiritedness. What are the go-tos for you without judgment? Yeah, if judgment comes up, to notice the judging and let it go. And of course, we all have them. not to say that it's bad or wrong to enjoy a wonderful meal or take in a beautiful sunset or enjoy other things of the senses, of course. But there's a difference between being in the present moment and enjoying those things, as fleeting as they may be, and relying on them as an escape or as a kind of compulsion. See if you can feel that difference. Notice that difference. It does take some self-inquiry to make these distinctions, but it's doable. It's very doable. That is the beginning of taking refuge in the truth, to see what's beneficial, what's helpful, and what isn't. So in the container of love and kindness, yeah, to whatever degree is possible, just doing a little bit of inquiry this evening. Is there anything that feels like it's a little immoderate or out of balance? That's the go-to. And to imagine that it might be possible, of course it is possible with time and practice, we can upgrade our refuge to something that's sacred, that's timeless, and an expression of our true nature that's really noble. To tap into our capacity for wisdom, compassion, and freedom, taking refuge in awareness, taking refuge in truth, taking refuge in love, taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And just notice, perhaps using your imagination skillfully, what would it be like in those moments of distress or boredom or anxiety to take refuge in something that really works? And I'd like to quote Joseph Goldstein in his book, One Dharma. He said, or he wrote, in their deeper meaning, the refuges always point back to our own actions and mind states. Although there may be many false starts and dead ends as we begin our journey, if our interest is sincere, we soon make a life-changing discovery. What we are seeking is within us. We make a life-changing discovery. What we are seeking is within us. And then quote one of my teachers, Tara Brach, who I want to give a big bow to this evening. I had a chance to be a student of hers for a couple of years in a teacher training program. We find true refuge whenever we recognize the silent space of awareness, which is behind all of our busy doing and striving. We find refuge whenever our hearts open with tenderness and love. We find refuge whenever we connect with the innate clarity, intelligence of our true nature. Taking refuge. So I'm going to pause here and just circle back and check and see, is there any brief sharing or question?
It seems to me that learning to take refuge in myself has alchemized so many tremendous wounds from childhood, alchemized a sense of a fear of not belonging, of not fitting in, of not being seen. And it's incredibly empowering for me to realize that I don't have to reach out there, although reaching out there and being connected with other people is profound. I can't really do that until I've done it within myself first. And that's what's awakening within me. I think one of my messages was, as long as I took care of everybody, then I would be noticed. And I'm really realizing that that just comes from a place of neediness in me, utterly vulnerable place. But when I turn it inward, I feel like I have solidity, whatever that means, to the self. But I have a sense of true connection. It's been a true awakening for me, and you know, that's just happening. I'm 75 years old, and that's just happening. So I'm really grateful for that.
Thanks for sharing. That's wonderful. It's inspiring.
Hi. This has just gotten me thinking of when I was first, right about the beginning of COVID, and we were all locked down and so on. I started getting back into meditation, and what amazed me was the lack of fear that I had, because in being awake and being aware, I can go there and I can survive pretty much anything. And I think it is also true that when I'm in dire straits, I forget that I have this refuge, but not always, and it eventually comes. And yeah, it's just such a huge gift to not be afraid. I think that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate your sharing.
Larry again. And I'm so glad, Doug, that you reiterated that quote from Tara Brach, because it's really stood out to me today before we started the group. And I think she says it so well. And I was noticing, now that I have this acronym, ATLIN, that she mentioned really in her quote, awareness and truth and love. That was part of the summary of the wholeness of it. It was beautiful. The other thing I wanted to mention was that I was thinking of the ATL, and that there's three, an A, a T, and an L. And in my mind, that connected with, silly me, it connected with a stool, you know, that has three legs. And in order to have, and any good Buddhist stool has equanimity. In order to have equanimity, it needs the balance of the three. So there again, I'm doing this to make alive and real, to feed with attention, that idea, so that it becomes not just like a dream that you forget 3 minutes after you awaken, but something real that becomes a part of one's life. That's, to me, that would be a great resolution on one level, and demonstration and exploration and fulfillment. All those things. If I were to make that truly alive through my attention and, oh, Tara Brach, I remember listening to her once on a CD she made, and she said, you know, meditation is really composed of two parts. One is attention, and the other is intention. Mm-hmm. So bringing the attention and the intention to that can make it more than just a passing dream. So that's why, kind of not my usual practice, I wanted to share those to make it more real, and to not upset the Buddhist teacher who doesn't want any trance dummies in her retreat. So, thank you.
Yeah. Not that it makes much difference, but she referred to them as trance junkies.
Thank you. That's my Mr. Magoo hearing aid at work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure that was particularly skillful speech on her part, but she said it in kind of an endearing way. So, yeah, you had to be there to really get the feel for it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. So just checking, anybody have any sharing that would like to happen?
I forgot one thing that I had intended to mention that struck me from the very beginning. I mean, even from when it was just the written words of the announcement of tonight, was that one reason that the focus area here of refuge, to me, and this is going over a long period of time, has never been as significant. I'm not just talking about myself personally, but what I see all around me, whether it's in Florida, you know, and what is there, a category 5 in preparation possibly, or, you know, the fires, or what we kind of started with. Rita, what you started with, you know, where there's, you look around and you see so much, and if I had to put it down to one, I think I would use two, but if I put it down to one predominant dark cloud, it would be anger/violence. And if I were to make it two, it would be anger and it would be fear. Those two things I see all over, and the search for the golden key is the search for refuge so that one's efforts may bear fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That's eloquently said. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just as you were sharing, just remembered something that I put in the email announcement, that taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, in awareness, truth, and love, we become refugees in the sense that we leave behind a land or a state of consciousness that maybe was inculcated in us, acculturated, that was saying, take refuge in this thing or that thing, or this altered state of consciousness, or this material, or this experience. So, in a sense, we become refugees from that, leaving that behind, and finding something that actually meets the deepest needs of our hearts. Most false refuges don't actually produce the results that we're looking for, ultimately.
Very true.
Is what it comes down to. And some of the fear and the anger at an unconscious level might be about that. I'm so angry that I keep doing what my culture or my belief system says should bring me happiness, and it doesn't work. It's enraging and terrifying. So anyway, that's a possibility. That could be true. So it's time for us to wrap up, folks. And so I'd like to close with a quote from Tara Brach, and then we'll do a little loving kindness practice. The great gift of the spiritual path is coming to trust that you can find your own way to true refuge. And you realize that you can start right where you are in the midst of your life and find peace in any circumstance, even at those moments when the ground shakes terribly beneath you, when there's a loss that will alter your life forever. You can still trust that you will find your way home. And that is possible because you've touched the timeless love and awareness that are intrinsic to who you are. So let's close with doing a little metta practice. And to the degree that we still find it challenging or difficult to remember, and we find places where we get stuck or we get caught in our compulsions or addictions or habit energy, we can bring kindness. We can bring love. And so just to take a moment to bring that intention. So attention and the intention to feel what it would be like to be a really good friend to ourselves when the going gets rough or we get pulled in to have an energy. Yeah. And so just an example of a metta phrase might be, I'm learning to love and accept myself even when I get caught up in obsessive thinking and ruminations, or when I engage in addictive web surfing, or yeah, fill in the blank. Learning to bring kindness, love, and awareness. Yeah, just offering some kindness, watering the seeds in this moment. And then extending our wishes of well-being. Letting our garden of our hearts grow and expand to include our Sangha here this evening. Our mutual support and presence. Offering that, those wishes of well-being and having the sense of it going from heart to heart and then extending beyond our community gathered here this evening, out to friends, family, loved ones, others that could benefit, as we find our own true refuge, we start to create a space of peace and love and freedom that others can feel. It's palatable. Offering that gift of our loving presence to the world, extending it, and imagining other beings being touched and finding that true refuge in themselves, and extending it out in all directions. May all beings awaken to their true nature. May all beings find true refuge. And I'd like to invite us to close with a simple chant. May all beings be happy. And we can do that three times. And then, sadhu, so be it, three times. And you're welcome to unmute if you'd like. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a pleasure to take refuge in your presence and be safe and well, and look forward to seeing you again. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.